rehabilitation and received a 16-level guideline enhancement on the ground that his 2004 Texas conviction for attempted deadly conduct was a crime of violence under Guideline Section 2L1.2. And principally at issue in this case is whether the district court reversibly erred in applying that enhancement. And we submit that it did for these reasons. The Texas deadly conduct statute defines two felony offenses. 2205B1 proscribes knowingly discharging a firearm at or in the direction of one or more persons. 22.05B2 proscribes knowingly discharging a firearm at or in the direction of a habitation, building, or vehicle with recklessness as to whether these are occupied. Under this court's decision in United States versus Hernandez-Rodriguez, an offense under 22.05B1.
Let me take you to unfortunately, I think we're all too familiar with that. These problems that are occurring. I guess go straight to the judgment and sentence of the court. And I've got that document in front of me. And as I read this document, this case is a little more direct than it's been briefed. If you stop it under Shepherd principles, as you wouldn't ordinarily would, stop with just the indictment, pleading out to count, that second count, it's pretty straightforward. However, you look at the judgment and plea of the court, what happens is that there are two appearances before the trial court, right? And it's one day appearance, then he comes back on a plea, and you read down in this judgment, he ends up pleading out to, therefore, judges decreed to the guilty of the offense of attempted deadly conduct, a state jail felony. That's what he ends up pleading to. And you go through these gymnastics, and appears to me from the judgment is that whatever he pled to, we don't have before us. So I don't know if that's so, I don't know how the state can carry its burden of demonstrating that this is a properly
Well, I do agree with your characterization of the judgment, Judge Higginbotham, but we also do have at our record excerpts tab 6 the written plea of guilty form, which does actually show he pled to attempted deadly conduct. And that form, I think, is very useful here because, A, it's signed by Mr. Hernandez, so it's Shepherd-approved findings. It shows that he didn't plead to the indictment, that he pled to a reduced charge of attempted deadly conduct, and there was no elaboration of how that attempted deadly conduct was committed, and there was no incorporation of the allegations of the indictment, even though there was a place where you could do that in the written plea of guilty.
Well, the judgment itself, though, I mean, I could be wrong, but the judgment recites that he entered a plea of guilty to the charge in the indictment relied upon by the state. It says he decided to proceed with the second count of the indictment. So it ties his guilty plea into the indictment.
No, it doesn't stop. That's the problem. It does say that, but it doesn't stop. And I stopped at that point until I got the document and read it, and it goes forward. It comes on September 20th. This call's again being called. The state appeared by a district attorney, Janet Stoggart, the court opinion finds it said defendant guilty of attempted deadly conduct, et cetera, et cetera. And then found ordered to judge Creed of guilty of the offense of attempted deadly conduct. So what you end up with, is something I don't see how from that you can determine that the defendant pled guilty to the crime of violence charged in the indictment.
I agree with that, and I would point the court to United States versus Herrera-Solorzano that's cited on page 14 of the blue brief, where it was a comparable situation where there was at least an ambiguity in the judgment, and this court held that was not sufficient to carry the government's burden. So, yes, I do agree that even if you just look at the judgment, there's too much ambiguity to...
I mean, we get so many of these on plain error that it's somewhat refreshing when we have it on de novo, and then we have to actually address some of those issues, like you say, because I think it could be different under plain error,
yes, the whole analysis
here, because of this problem with the judgment.
And it, believe me, it's refreshing for me to have one that is preserved, too.
Which brings me to, you had filed a letter to waive oral argument given the timing of the sentence. And so has he been in custody since he was arrested or indicted or whatever in March of 2009? Is that the reason why a 51-month sentence is soon drawing to a close or whatever the right term is?
Yes. I think what happened, he got the 51-month sentence, and we had finished briefing early in 2011, but I think this case was held pending the decision in United States versus
Sanchez. Yeah. You know, I just sort of put out there for your consideration, having nothing to do with the decision in this case or any other case, just to watch for those kinds of things and maybe make some judgment calls about whether you want to waive an argument in order to get something proceeding further. Because I encounter this with screeners and oral arguments with some frequency that we're running up either on becoming moot or on where even if we went the defendant's way, it would give him very little in the way of relief by the time it got back to the trial court. And this just troubles me. Typically, with a sentence this long, you don't have that issue, but I would just urge you to urge your colleagues to maybe take a look at that. When you've got a sentence that's 360 months long or something, that's not an issue. But these shorter sentences create this kind of scenario, and I just think that's something to keep in mind.
And we do try to be cognizant of that. It's just we didn't know when Sanchez was going to come out. I wasn't even completely sure that it was being held for Sanchez. Mm-hmm. That was just my
guess. No, I'm not blaming you for that particular circumstance. I'm just saying in the overall picture of the arguments you make, the request for oral argument, so on, and maybe even bringing to our attention, even asking for an expedited appeal. I'm not saying you'll get it, and you can't do anything if we hold things and take too long. And I'm not saying we took too long in this case. Just, I've encountered this enough that I thought it was worth saying, and you can ignore it if you like.
Oh, no, I won't ignore it. We're concerned, we're concerned about it, too. But I would urge that better late than never, and this is a case where you put the Sanchez issue to a side, but Mr. Hernandez should prevail on the first part of his crime of violence issue due to the lack of proof. And we would ask the court to vacate and remand for resentencing and also, given the imminent release date, to issue the mandate forthwith. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Turner.
May it please the court, it seems that the problem
good morning already, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The problem is evident, and the judge is eloquent as Judge Hood in describing his ruling on this, saying that if a person shoots at an individual, that's certainly a crime of violence in his mind, eye and the dog doesn't hunt. Like General McAuliffe in the Battle of the Bulls deserves some defense. And in this instance, I would suggest that the one statute we omit in our briefs is the Code of Criminal Procedure of Texas, Article 37.09, which defines what is a lesser included offense in the state of Texas. And what Mr. Cabrera admits to in his state plea was, I plead guilty to the lesser included offense. That definition includes, it consists of an attempt to commit the offense charged, and with specific reference in the judgment of conviction, the state judgment of conviction, to the offense charged, count two, the evidence that they're proceeding on and the elements they're proceeding on are, in fact, that allegation in count two of the indictment, the intentional use of force.
But, I mean, he was found guilty of attempted 22.05. The problem is you can take your gun out and start sort of shooting, and you might be shooting at a building, you might be shooting at a person. I'm not sure what attempting to shoot at a building or a person exactly is, but whatever that is, that's the difference here. And that doesn't make a difference to 22.05 as a totality. It just makes a difference to us in this elaborate crime of violence jurisprudence that we're surprised.
I would submit that when it says a charged offense, that would be 22.05B1 is the specific charge. There's no other facts. There's no other charge alleged. There's no other indication he shot at a building, a vehicle. The facts, and I know we can't rely upon the facts in and of themselves, but in this instance, the indictment, the state indictment, charges a specific set of facts that he shot at.
But then he was, I mean,
and then the state,
we didn't make this whole set of laws that govern this area. But when somebody pleads to something that's not the indictment offense, then we have an issue. And that's the problem we have here.
Well, that's what he's saying, though.
Our position is in fact, this is within the indictment. The state of Texas, the rule in the state of Texas in the 37.09, the court's vested with jurisdiction of that charged offense, 22.05B1, and is thereby vested with jurisdiction on all the lesser included counts. 37.09 includes a specific definition. Texas specifically defines what a lesser included offense is. And in this particular incident, it consists of an attempt to commit the offense charged. That's precisely what they did here. And the basic reason was is they gave him a chance to serve his time in the state jail facility as opposed to serving time in the state TDC.
I thought we had held that indictment can't be used if the defendant enters a plea to a lesser included offense unless that is actually contained in the indictment. I guess you're saying that the lesser included offense is an indictment?
It is within the indictment, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Well, it's within it, but is it in it? I mean,
it is the charged offense. The charged offense is 22.05B1. It doesn't change.
I think as a matter of Texas procedure, they didn't have to re-indict him.
No, they didn't.
But and that's fine. And we have a lot of cases like that. Nobody's saying that this is an invalid conviction under Texas law. The problem we have is under federal law of trying to construe state judgments. That's what we're dealing with. And under our law, we can't look at this and say that he definitively agreed that he had shot at a person or pulled his gun out, waving it towards a person or whatever an attempt to shoot at a person would be. Because I assume if he hit him, we'd have a wholly different charge.
So. If they'd have pursued on the first count, it would have been a different charge. But they made this agreement, and then I would suggest that it's within the charge, and that's about what the government can offer for Judge Hood today. And I'm prepared to take any more questions.
Okay.
The problem is you didn't cite it in your brief, huh?
No, I came up with this as I was continuing to propose this in the last week or two, getting ready for argument today.
Yeah.
So it's not in the brief, but 37.09 is the Code of Criminal Procedure provision that they proceeded under.
Okay. No, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Mr. Crooks.
I just do want to urge that this new argument is waived because it wasn't briefed. Second, I do want to urge that the case law says the indictment drops out of the picture when you plead to a lesser offense.
I thought we settled that in Bonilla. That's what.
Yes, Bonilla is a perfect example of that, but there are numerous other cases we cited in the briefs too, Neri Hernandez, Gonzalez Ramirez. And
am I right that, I mean, this is a question of federal law, how we interpret the state law, rather than saying,
push it away from you. You don't need the mic.
Well, the recorder does, though, and I think posterity would like to hear from me. All right. That being said, Mr. Crooks. The question before us is not whether the state properly proceeded to find him guilty of a lesser included offense without re-indicting him, which I think is what the 37.09 argument would go to. The question is whether under federal law, in examining this display of Shepard-approved documents, what did he definitively admit to, or was found guilty of, and that's the rub. And to me, that's the problem with this.
Right. And I just want to point out in conclusion that Shepard talks about the demand for certainty in this context, and that certainty is not satisfied here. So we would ask for vacature of the sentence. Thank you.
Okay. We call the next case for the morning, Black.